I am Plot on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Well, whether you're a leader or not, a new book will be of usefulness to anyone in a group situation, a work situation, even a family deal, or if you just deal with people on a regular basis, which we all must from time to time. The book is called Make Light Work in Groups, 10 Tools to Transform Meetings, Companies, and Communities. Its author, Kate Sutherland, joins me now. I'll get her to tell us about the book, who should use it, how and how it all came about. Kate Sutherland is an author, consultant, coach, and social entrepreneur who helps change agents and community organizations be innovative and effective. There's a book launch this Saturday, the 20th of October, 2012. Visit katersutherland.com for information on the book and the event. Also, there's another event, the 5th of December, 2012, at the UBC Sauder School and their Ideas for Impact series. The book is published by Insight Press. Please welcome to the Plot Online program, Kate Sutherland. Ms. Sutherland, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So this is your second book, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. The first book is simply called Making Light Work, right?
Yes, and then 10 Tools for Inner Knowing.
So that's for more personal development, I guess?
Yes.
And then this book is how to deal with with people, I suppose, in group situations and the sort.
They kind of cross over in that what works for individuals helps us in groups, and what works in groups helps us personally.
Yeah. Now, you came up with this idea of making light work. Can you go into that? Because people listening to us obviously haven't picked up the book yet.
Right.
What is the concept? What does that mean?
Well, there's the first association for me is the phrase, many hands make light work. And the sense that, you know, when you're cleaning up after dinner, if everybody pitches in, the work gets done very quickly, very easily, joyously, effortlessly. And the kind of twist in there that I like, make light work, is that part of what's happening is the light of consciousness or the light of inner knowing or a more spiritual dimension, although it's not so explicit. And I'm not attached to that. I mean, the books are very, very practical. But I believe it's very, very practical to work with some attention to the inner side of things, the being side, and our intuition and intention, and the lever of perception is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Shifting how we see things.
Now, why is it, do you think, that we in this modern world of ours fail to do those things?
That's a great question. I think part of it is that they are almost closeted, that we aren't, we don't get taught about intuition when we're in school. We get taught about outer learning, and we've lost, the kind of cultural connection. We're getting it back. It's coming back all over the place, but I think we got very attached to what science could prove, and the fact that we could put people on the moon, and that we could work with disease and so forth. So we kind of ignored and bypassed the more subjective, messy interior, harder to get agreement. Like my inner world, your inner world. Whereas let's just talk about the facts, ma'am.
Yeah.
It's been through our culture. I think the Western culture has become very disconnected.
And did you find in your life that you were disconnected yourself, say?
Indeed. Yeah. I felt, I had a real epiphany in my early 30s, so just like a life-changing turning point. And prior to that, I felt like I was relatively numb, relatively on autopilot, relatively sort of driven by outer, what people thought of me, how people saw me, trying to fit in, trying to, not feeling very good about myself. And those pieces all shifted for me as I became more connected to my own inner dimension, to my intuition, to what my gut was telling me, to having more faith in what I was drawn to, as opposed to what I felt I should do.
Can you illustrate how bad it has to get before one has to make this sort of life-turning change?
I don't. Well, for me personally, I had a real dark night of the soul. But I don't think that's necessary. I mean, I was devastated. I was like that turning point for me was everything. I felt like I was uprooted. Everything I had, I had to really reached a very, very low place. I knew I had to find a different way of being in the world. I was crushed. I was emotionally devastated. I was really lost. And it was like a dark, dark place. And then 3 days later, in after sort of saying I need help, this seems to happen to me, 3 days after I ask for help, and I just put out a kind of, desperate plea, a friend gave me a book that was written by one of the founders of the Findhorn Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'd never considered going to Findhorn. I'd heard about it, but I felt very called to go there. And so that was the beginning for me, that what I learned there. Was a very powerful transformation, including, I don't know, how much detail, but the very first day, I had an experience of, I was walking outside in a beautiful setting, sunshine, beautiful trees, daffodils blooming, and I heard a voice, and I'd never heard a voice before, and the voice said, "Everything you need is inside."
Huh.
And I had this instant knowing that that was the answer to my quest of finding a different way of working that would be sustainable for me and would allow for me to give all that I wanted to give. And but I didn't, I also knew very shortly afterwards that I didn't know how to live that. How do I live? Everything you need is inside.
Yeah.
I unpacked it and feel like that's what I've spent, growing for the last 22 years, growing my understanding of that and my trust of, and sort of it's been like a koan. And, what does it mean inside? Is that literally inside or is that, who am I if it's all inside? And it distills, interrupt me if I'm going in a direction you don't want, but it distills into three kind of buckets for me. One is that inside me is a inner guidance system that helps me navigate, and that is like I may not know exactly why I'm doing something, but I know that this is the right track, and it if I follow that thread, which is related, some people call it a purpose or, my calling. There's something. So that's one really core piece for me. And the second kind of bucket I call inner work in that there are ways that are old ways, new ways, of listening to when I know which way I'm going, how to be able to work more effectively at it. So if I have to make a decision between whether I go to this meeting or I don't, I can tune in through very simple tools. If I'm leading a group process, I have the second book has very, very practical tools that allow me to shape and frame how I am and what I bring to a group context. So they're all different kinds of inner work. And the third bucket for me is I call trust, in that I have come to have a deeper and deeper inner knowing that life is trustworthy, that I'm trustworthy, that if I choose to trust, and I think we all in every moment have a choice between fear and trust,
mm-hmm.
and that our society kind of emphasizes the fear side of things. Oh, we better be careful.
Yeah.
And there's this it's not about beer ad happiness. It's not about, but there's something about life will take us where we need to go, and it's not always comfortable. In fact, it's usually uncomfortable, but it feels right, and to keep trusting myself and trusting the moment and trusting that life isn't leading me in a blind alley or leading me over a cliff, or if it does lead me over a cliff, that, you know, that's exactly what I've needed, because I felt like, you know, I my trust was shaken by the experience.
Yeah.
21 years ago, 22 years ago, but in retrospect, I realized that's exactly what I needed to move me.
That's a key, because as you said, we are tuned in society,
mm-hmm.
to be careful,
mm-hmm.
and you know, to be frank, we get screwed from time to time,
mm-hmm.
and so trust is a very difficult thing to have in one's heart, one's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, what are some tips then to get to that point?
I think it's being aware of how trusting you are is kind of just being aware.
And I guess it's okay to get the bad stuff from time to time, right?
Yeah, it's okay. It's what you do with what you get, mm-hmm. is one kind of quickie, and it is a choice when something happens to us, we get rattled. We get to choose whether we contract with that or whether we stay open, and that, you know, sometimes that choice is much harder than others. But it's basically to be aware of that dynamic, and to honor, to know, okay, I'm not very trusting right now. Fine, you know, like I be warm and compassionate and gentle with myself, because, you know, I've just had a big dent, a big bump. But to not somehow, like the biblical tale of Job, to not let that shake my trust in life. I have setbacks, and they strengthen me. They call forth more than I know I have. And that basic orientation, that basic choice about trust is, from my experience, you know, and I think we each need to go there in at our own pace, and, you know, like, it doesn't, I'm not saying, you know, you hate your job, just get rid of it and trust life, you know, throw yourself off into the unknown, but to be, if you have, to recognize that we have a choice of how we respond, how we feel about, how we perceive different situations, and how tremendously powerful trust is, both personally and in group settings. Trusting that someone else's behavior makes sense to them, for example.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't make any sense to me, but I trust that that person is doing the best that they can. That's that they aren't, even though it seems like they're out to get me, even if, you know, and so of course we all go to the worst case scenarios of, you know, the Holocaust or whatever, but it's a, that's, I think, our default setting of problem, of fear, and of justifying being fearful. And when we're in our ordinary, unfolding day-to-day life, we have, or are extraordinarily beautiful, magnificent. Can we really appreciate the beauty of each moment, life, those choices, moment by moment and big step by big step, to choose to trust ourselves, trust that I'm enough, trust that my life has meaning and that I have something important to offer, trust that that what I want to contribute is important.
Yeah.
Those kinds of basic stances, basic choices.
Right.
Yeah.
So the subtitle of the book gives us the 10 tools to, mm-hmm. to transform meetings, companies, and communities.
Yes.
So let's take them one at a time here. How do you think, what do you suggest in the book, I should say, that we could use to make, say, meetings that one takes more effective than they actually are?
So many meetings are so much
meaningless sometimes.
Yeah, and very disconnected. So one really important piece from, you know, as an individual going into any meeting is to reflect on what your purpose is. What is your own purpose in going to the meeting, and not, you know, like in the best possible sense. What's the best purpose you could bring to that meeting? Bringing your creativity, your heart, your ideas, bringing, you know, what's to imagine the best possible outcome, the best really making a difference. And for to really help in the creation of meetings, or if you're in, to help people hosting a meeting, to be really clear about what the purpose of the meeting is. So far too many meetings are just left to the, you know, just bring people together when there's been no reflection on mm-hmm. on why. And you don't have to be the one hosting the meeting to make a difference.
Yeah, that's something that I came away from reading this book, because not all of us are leaders,
uh-huh.
or managers, say.
Right.
Yet there is, we all play a part in every situation that we're in.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can be in a meeting and say, you know, it would help me to understand what we hope to get out of this meeting.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that it, maybe that's too strong, but you know, in some context, but some kind of question that what's the goal, or how would we like things to be a year from now, or something that gives a bigger, you know, that brings people to clarifying why they're there.
Yeah.
And it's a very simple thing, very, very powerful.
Now, your work, you're a consultant, you're a life coach, mm-hmm. you train companies and organizations and the sort. Do you find that there are things that companies are doing wrong that need to be addressed, say?
Well, I think we're all, you know, muddling along, but in the sort of a broad stroke piece, I think one, we don't begin to activate or cultivate the people who work in companies, in government, in organizations, like where is the intersection between a personal passion and the group's or the organization's mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so people kind of, many people hate their jobs and are going through the motions, or are, you know, and sometimes in sabotage mode, you know, like they're so frustrated that they become obstructionists. And to really create ways of identifying what is a personal goal and personal passion for the people who work in organizations. That would be semi-revolutionary.
Yeah. And then this builds into how our communities are set up and how they should be set up, right?
Yeah. There's at the community level, there are, I think, a lot of people who feel isolated and lonely or don't have a clue about how to engage. So one of the tools in the book is called enterprise facilitation. And I, in my work, have reframed that as community initiative facilitation. And the spirit of that is that you bring together people who have a passion for something with people who have organizational or financial savvy, and then people who have promotion and publicity. So it's like a trinity, that in order for an initiative to be successful, it needs all three of those. And many of our, that there's a place for, what in the model is called an enterprise facilitator, somebody who convenes or who brings together groups of people that can help things happen. And I see a huge need in our communities for that function, that this somebody who says, you know, if you're interested in gardening, that's something I did on my street, you know, we put out flyers. If you're interested in growing more food and helping each other grow more food, come together. And what ended up emerging was something we called the two-block diet.
Mm.
And it's been huge. My whole street is completely different. We started with helping each other grow food, but it has extended to helping each other when we have health crises or with, you know, supporting each other for the book launch. I have, you know, like that, it's a real community through that process of bringing people together. And so we kind of need people to have the courage to trust that there's people out there who share their interests and to create ways of meeting and cross-pollinating the different capacities.
This has been a fascinating conversation, Kate. There's a lot of useful stuff in this book. I suggest people pick it up for that. Good luck with it.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
The website for more, katersutherland.com. The book is called Make Light Work in Groups, 10 Tools to Transform Meetings, Companies, and Communities. It's published by Insight Press. It's author Kate Sutherland on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.